Hello. Okay. All right, then, here we go. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 2. Okay, just as a reminder before we get started, I don't monitor the screen while I talk. That's because I'm just not very good at it. So I will stop once or twice at natural pausing points, and I'll look at the screen then to see if anybody has written down questions or comments that they want to discuss. And we'll spend some time going over those at that time. And then we'll also leave a little bit of time at the end for questions too. So please do write out anything there on the chat that you'd like me to address, and know that I will get to it eventually during one of those Q&A periods. Okay? So here we go. First things first, I want to back up for a sec. And the first question that I want to ask you is, why do you want to awaken? And I'm being serious here. Have you ever really stopped to ask yourself why it is that you want to awaken? Meaning, what do you hope to gain from it? And I'm asking this because we had a question come in at the end of the last session that was on this topic. And it's actually a really, really good question to ask, in fact, because it helps us get clear on the road that we want to take and why we want to take it. And I say this because I myself spent many years, like 30 years, chasing after enlightenment in the hopes that it would bring me states of being that I wanted to possess. States of being like inner peace, equanimity. I was hoping that it would bring me a state of lasting joy. And also, above all, really, I wanted to be able to stop judging myself and others. And I wanted to be able to feel authentically loving of others, whether they themselves were lovable people or not. You might be able to relate to that one. And as a shy person, you know, a person of sometimes rather shaky self-esteem, I was especially hoping for unshakable inner confidence, a kind of strength, a feeling that I could stand absolutely solid within myself and not mind what anybody else thinks of me in any situation. But the interesting thing about that is I only realized fairly recently that awakening itself, enlightenment itself, doesn't actually contain any of these states. And that, I don't know why, that just completely amazed me. In fact, you could argue that there is no such thing as an awakened state, that it's really just a continuum of more and more clarified perception, more clarified vision, more and more moments of limitless recognition and allowance of what is, like infinitely scalable, or at least this is how it appears to me at this moment. Your experience of it might be different, I don't know. But I do know that all these states that I was hoping to grasp onto as the side effects that I just assumed came from the acquisition of enlightenment, let's say, well, I was just completely wrong about that. I was wrong about all of it. There are no intrinsic states that come with awakening. There is no package deal. It might be easier to reach some of these states, like joy or like bliss or rock-solid inner confidence, after the mind has made the choice to recognize and embrace the truth of what is. I imagine that's probably the case. A clear mind more easily embraces these kinds of higher states of being, maybe, because there is less remaining resistance to those states. But it doesn't have to embrace anything. Awareness itself is empty. There are no states that are part and parcel of waking up. And in fact, it seems to me, in my experience, that it's way easier and more satisfying to set a course toward mastering these states of being themselves, the states like peace and joy and confidence and all the rest, and to just forget about chasing enlightenment, and to just enjoy the journey itself, the ups and downs of learning to master these states, and then, you know, just not pay any attention at all to the idea of enlightenment. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One is that there are very concrete steps that anybody can take to master these beautiful states. And they are well within a regular human being skill set. It definitely takes a little effort, but anybody can do it. And the second reason, probably even more important than the first, is that to chase enlightenment itself is, by the way, an absolutely futile process. It is 100% doomed to failure. And here is why. You probably have heard this before, but I will say it again. There is an aspect of you that is always awake. It's always enlightened, and it's always present. This has always been so, and it's so right now, and it will always be equally so forever and ever, amen, throughout eternity. And this aspect of you, whether you're focusing on it or not, whether you're conscious of it or not, whether you even believe it's really true about you personally or not, this aspect of you is looking out through your own eyes right now. Enlightened awareness itself can't ever be found anywhere other than within you. So it's a hopeless quest to look for enlightenment out there, identifying it as something that you currently don't have, but you want to obtain it in the future. You can search the universe until the end of time if you want to, and you'll never find enlightenment out there. And you'll also never find enlightenment in the future either, because obviously it's already here and now. You know, so what are you going to do? So all of that is why I say it's a good idea, at least for now, to just forget about chasing enlightenment and give yourself a break, and let's just work on becoming more familiar with the states of being that seem to sometimes, but not always, go hand in hand with enlightenment. Because guess what? Here comes another one of those spiritual paradoxes. When you finally relax and you stop chasing enlightenment, and when you focus more on the states that you want instead, like inner peace and joy and all the rest of it, you'll find that enlightenment, or at least more and more clarity of mind, tends to come chasing after you quite effortlessly. So why don't we just deliberately choose for now to put the cart before the horse, as it were, and let's go for those quote-unquote post-enlightenment states before we even think about enlightenment itself. Because I think you'll find that your wagon will move a whole lot quicker and with a whole lot less effort down the path by doing it that way around. So let me stop here and see if anybody has a question or comment on this business of setting the quest for enlightenment aside, because I know it sort of flies in the face of what people believe or have been told about the spiritual path and what it's supposed to look like. Okay, good. Yes, should be. All right, so now let's move on to one of my personal favorites, and that is the importance of frequency and vibration. So I want to go into some pretty explicit depth and detail over the next few weeks about frequency and vibration. It's something that many teachings have historically overlooked or ignored because technically, in ultimate truth, energetic vibration and frequency aren't real. Yeah, but actually they are real as far as our experiences in human form goes. And that goes for our spiritual experience of life as well. So, yeah, your energy field is really what enables you to experience yourself, to experience your world, and to experience your journey back to remembering the divine. It's all the same thing. It's all one seamless set of experiences without separation or division of any kind. And that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Nothing is separate anywhere. So why would your spiritual journey be a completely different thing from the rest of your existence? So that's why I want to get seriously interested in frequency and vibration and in our own energy field. Because the energy field is kind of the mechanical nuts and bolts that enables everything we're interested in here to take place. And it's where we have the opportunity to exercise mastery and choice. So, okay, frequency and vibration. When I talk about frequency and vibration, these two words, at least for me, are more or less interchangeable. Your energy field, and everybody does come equipped with an energy field, your field vibrates at a particular frequency or a particular range of frequencies, depending on the contents of your mind, the contents of your thoughts and your beliefs and your words and your actions. You've probably heard many times from the law of attraction crowd that thoughts are things. And it's true. Let's forget the law of attraction for the moment, although we'll be coming back to it. The way that the law of attraction has made it into the popular consciousness might leave a little something to be desired, but it's an inescapable law, and it's a pretty magnificent law, actually, and it's always operational in every realm, including your spiritual journey. So we will come back to it in future weeks, and we'll look at it in a way that has nothing to do with attracting a fast car or a cute boyfriend. Or girlfriend. Anyway, yes, it's true that thoughts are things in the sense that they are composed entirely of electromagnetic energy. So you, the conscious being that you recognize yourself to be, are composed entirely of electromagnetic energy, which is why the contents of your own mind, both the conscious and unconscious aspects of your mind, are absolutely key in determining both the state of your vibratory frequency and your experience of the world as you know it. And that's because electromagnetism attracts thoughts or experiences or even physical stuff of a similar nature to itself. And it repels those things that are unlike itself. If you played with magnets as a kid, you pretty much know how it works. So your life and your world do attract the things and experiences that are outpictured by your mind and your thoughts and your beliefs and all that stuff. But here's an interesting thing. All possible vibratory states that you or anybody else could ever potentially embody, all these states are connected. It's not like there's this very low vibrational state of being over here on planet Earth, and then the higher states, the holier vibratory states that only exist in some other heavenly place that has no connection to this one where we live. In fact, you could say that all possible vibratory states from lowest to highest are actually all one continuous thing, one continuous field made up of infinite levels, if that makes sense. And you can move up or down through any or all of them. You have access, at least potentially, to the entire field. So it's one unbroken continuum, kind of energetic possibility. Meaning that a lower state of life experience, for example, to be in a state of, let's say, hellish hopelessness or having suicidal thoughts or murderous rage or something like that, that is obviously at the lower end of one vast continuous spectrum of frequency. And in the upper range, you find unconditional love and recognition of oneness and the bliss of God realization and things like that. And then there's everything you can think of in between. So historically, while you may have believed in the past that great saints or sages like, you know, like Jesus maybe, maybe you assumed that, oh, they're made of different stuff from you or me. You might have believed that those higher aspects of embodied knowing, like unconditional love, that those are something completely separate from you, and they're made of something different than you are capable of experiencing or attaining in this lifetime, or any other lifetime, maybe. But actually, as you can see, because it's all one continuum, and where you happen to be on that continuum at any given moment is a choice that you yourself are capable of making. You can see that you actually do. So we're going to address this about the frequency continuum in greater detail over the course of these next few weeks. And it's actually this business of vibratory frequency that holds the potential for all liberation. This is what is so exciting, at least to me, because it's why you can be active and not passive about choosing your own state of being. And that is an unbelievably valuable thing, at least in my opinion. Sages have always pointed to the excitement of this possibility, or at least they've hinted at it, about this issue of there being incredible value and power that's intrinsic to each human being. There's, in particular, there's a Buddhist parable from the Lotus Sutra that's called The Gem and the Robe. And it's a story of a poverty-stricken person who is wandering the countryside. They're destitute and they're hungry and they're hopeless. And all the while, they're possessing this amazing jewel of incalculable value that's sewn into the lining of his robe. But he doesn't know it. And after years of all this suffering, it's finally pointed out to him by the Buddha that he's been carrying this jewel with him in his possession all along. And he's actually a very rich man because now he knows that he has this gem. And in my years of Buddhist practice, I would hear this parable and I would think, where the hell is my jewel? Because I was impatient, you know. I don't want to hear a parable. This is the 21st century. I want to know details. I want to know, you know, forget the nice metaphors, exactly what is my jewel? Where is it? How do I get my hands on it? And where do I get myself a damn seam ripper so I can open up the hem of my garment? And I never did get the answers to those questions back in the day. But then suddenly out of the blue, like one day several months ago, it just hit me. And I realized that my infinite gem of unlimited richness is my own infinitely powerful and beautiful vibratory field. I've always had it with me. Everybody has always had their vibratory field with them, their energetic field. It's part of the package. It's standard equipment that comes with being human. We each come equipped with an energetic field that is capable, at least potentially capable, of infinite expansion in self-knowledge and God-knowledge. That's infinite expansion in embodiment of heaven-to-earth frequency. Your infinite vibratory potential is resting in dormancy until you pull it out and dust it off and start putting it to use consciously. because we actually have the power to choose how we use our mind and therefore what kind of frequency we're going to emit. So I choose personally, I aspire anyway, to have a sparkling, clear frequency. I want a frequency that is no stranger to peace, to gratitude and joy and unconditional love, and all those other vibratory states of being that I know I want to embody full time. So I realized that enlightened mastery calls for scrupulous cleaning and conscious nurturing of high vibration in myself at all times, to the best of my ability anyway, so that my field can radiate throughout the universe, transmitting the I am frequency. And that's an amazing thing to aspire to. And yes, it definitely takes work and commitment. And yes, it's ambitious, but doable. And at first, the mind will balk at it because it isn't used to making conscious effort. And it doesn't initially sound like fun. It sounds like a job because it means that in the moment, when I'm being confronted by something or somebody that maybe is not 100% to my preferences, that's when I make a conscious decision about how I'm going to perceive that thing or that person. And it means that no matter what the weather shows me, remember that symbol that we talked about last week, no matter what kind of clouds are obscuring the sun of my blue sky, I have the choice to respond in a high vibration way, in a clear sky way. I can respond consciously in high vibration at all times, and that is a hallmark of mastery. Anyone, I'm convinced, anyone can suck it up and step into mastery. Anybody can make that choice. You know why? Because we're all infinitely powerful creators. And total freedom of choice is your superpower. No matter what's going on, you always have the power to choose how you want to respond. You choose how you want to perceive that thing, whatever it is, and then you choose how you want to respond. So, like I mentioned earlier, unconditional love is a frequency, like any particularly high frequency, but it's just a frequency existing somewhere along your spectrum of possible frequencies. It is not some magical, unreachable state that might magically drop in out of nowhere at some point in the imaginary future. And to me, that is amazingly good news. So you can make the choice and set an intention that you will consistently raise your frequency so that you can begin to experience and maybe even eventually embody in a more permanent way the frequency of unconditional love, because that is totally within your power of choice. And I'm using unconditional love as an example here because it's one of the frequencies on my top 10 list. You know, I choose it as part of my embodied awakened state. For you, it might be peace that you prioritize the most, or the embodied knowing that everything is one, you know, or whatever it is that you desire the most. You choose it, you set that intention, and then you start grooming your personal energy field. You start cleaning it and working with it and being lovingly mindful of it, and you will reach the type of awakened feeling states that you choose for brief moments maybe, and then, you know, you work at it and it happens more and more often for longer and longer if you remain committed to the cleanup project. Nothing that the ego mind, you know, the chattering monkey mind, nothing that it dishes up can touch a vibration of love and truth. Not really. The chattering mind only seems powerful because you've believed in it for such a long time. And, of course, it brags to you endlessly about how powerful it is, and you've just been in the habit of believing it. So you might have a hard time at first believing that you have the power to choose your own frequency, which is another way of saying that you have the power to choose your own thoughts and your own responses and your own beliefs and even your own feeling states. But the ball is actually in your court. The power is all yours. So yes, you can do it. You do have the power of choice. You just haven't exercise those muscles in a few millennia, so they're a little bit like floppy and shrunken. But they're there, and they do respond surprisingly quickly to consistent mindful exercise. So if you want to be masterful, you just have to make the choice and follow through and do it. And keep making the choice and doing it. And again and again, and some more and some more. And you fall down and you get up and you keep making the choice and doing it. And it really does get easier and more fun pretty quickly, in my experience anyway. So here is a great exercise for that. I love doing this off and on, back to it over and over. In neutral times, and by that I mean no overt challenges, no major crises going on in your life. You know, if you're in a relatively peaceful period, you can do the following daily meditation as an exercise in mind mastery just to get those muscles engaged. You set aside an hour and you spend those 60 unbroken minutes knowing yourself as the light and the love and the power that you are in truth. Or if that languaging doesn't work for you, choose something that does. You know, you spend that time knowing yourself as the peace of God, or knowing yourself as the sparkling, clear energy field that you are, the unconditioned mind that you are. Whatever feels good, whatever resonates. But you spend that solid, continuous hour thinking only thoughts that affirm those qualities, those truthful qualities about your unlimited, truthful state, and or your unlimited, truthful identity, rather. And ideally, also try to be feeling the uplifted feeling states that are associated with those thoughts, because the uplifted feeling states are the sign that your frequency is uplifting as well. So once again, we'll talk more about the finer points of energetic frequency in a later segment. But anyway, the main point of this exercise is to get the firsthand feel that you yourself are capable of choosing how to employ your own mind and your own thoughts. And this means learning to choose your thoughts consciously. Not every single thought from moment to moment, but by and large, to be there, you know, steering the wheel. So this exercise is not about emptying your mind of thought, and it's not about being the passive observer of thoughts that float through your mind. This particular exercise is about teaching yourself conscious choice. If a negative thought or like a junk food kind of thought, meaning, you know, just unconscious thoughts about nothing useful, if you notice those kinds of habitual thoughts have wandered in and taken over, you just patiently steer your mind back into the higher thoughts of your choice again and again and again for 60 minutes. And it actually, I don't know, I really enjoy this one. I suppose It depends on where you're at when you sit down to do this exercise. It could be quite painful if you're forcing yourself to do it. But I just become really inspired and really sort of just suffused with light, the more that I affirm to myself what I really am in truth. And it feels really empowering to recognize that I don't need to think the useless thoughts that come creeping in, because they will come creeping in. But turning away from them becomes really fun and rewarding. I can't remember if it was fun and rewarding the first time I did it or not, but it is now. So, I don't know, do that every day for a week or two and just see. Just, you know, if the idea appeals to you, try it just so that you can get a real flavor of what it feels like to recognize firsthand that you, yes, you, do have the power to choose uplifted thoughts. Because it's valuable to find out firsthand that you're not really at the mercy of your habitual conditioned mind with its usual bottom feeder thoughts. It's worth putting in the consistent effort to discover it for yourself, I think, because it pays off in so many ways. And here's something important about doing this exercise that I would point out, I would add. If your child or your partner or whoever interrupts your hour, that's an opportunity for you to take that exercise on the road. You know, you take it out of the realm of a meditation exercise and into real practice where it counts. So you respond to their interruption as the love or the peace or the pristine energy field that you really are. So this exercise, among other things, is a nourisher. It's a strengthener and a deepener, because it's really like high quality protein to build strong muscles for doing the job. So by all means, you know, it's important. Set aside time and space to do this exercise in private, away from, you know, hectic external influences. I think it's worth prioritizing it. And that way it's much easier to feel the uplift that comes with these intentionally chosen higher thoughts. Because, you know, it's way easier to feel the bliss of these thoughts when you're alone in a serene spot. But I would say that the ultimate goal always is to never keep this in the realm of an exercise separate from daily life. The goal would be to walk around eyes open, responding automatically to life's distractions and challenges in this higher way. So if you do get interrupted during your hour by somebody or something, consider it a gift. And see, there you go. You just chose a higher way of perceiving the fact that somebody interrupted you. Good job. Because the real work of mastery happens when bliss isn't on the menu. So you can be authentically grateful that they're giving you the chance to practice this in a more challenging, more authentic way. They're actually lining up to help you in your goal of becoming an enlightened master. And that is so cool, right? It's so incredibly, deeply loving of them to do that. But it's baby steps. First, you need to recognize firsthand that you have it in your power to decide and choose what kind of thoughts you want to think, and that you choose to think only thoughts that contribute in some way to the highest good, whatever that looks like in your life. But really, it's such an unfamiliar thing. You need to prove it to yourself first that it's even possible to do. You know, first things first. All right, I'm going to stop for a minute and see if there are any questions or comments here. Yep, nothing yet. Okay. Back to our program. Okay. So what does it mean to know yourself in enlightened mastery? What does that look like? Well, this is my definition. to know yourself in enlightened mastery, in high, clear vibration, is to recognize your own infinite identity as the love that effortlessly holds all things. It's to know yourself as creation itself, as joy itself, as bliss, as freedom from fear, and perfect safety, and pretty much every other beautiful thing that you can name. All these things occurring as aspects of the clear blue sky that I am. So, you know, that's aspirational. It probably doesn't happen all at once. Well, I guess it does for a few people here and there who catapult high and they just stay there. But you and me, even if we're not quite like that, we can still travel the same vibratory road step by consciously chosen step, always heading upwards. So it's helpful to reaffirm the commitment at least once a day, at least in the beginning, you know, asking for additional help from the ever-helpful universe in being lifted and supported in whatever ways are most useful. You will find that this request for help tends to get some kind of immediate response. You know, you'll suddenly run across a new book or a teaching or a YouTube video or a message from somebody pointing you towards renewed inspiration. And then new inspiration quite naturally brings renewed commitment. And it's great how that works. And in disrupting the negative thought patterns over and over, another thing happens, like scientifically speaking. The brain is also being weaned off its addiction to negative thought and negative expectation. Old neural pathways are being pruned as old behaviors and beliefs are no longer indulged. You know, they're no longer reinforced with jolts of negative emotional juice. And those are the addictive chemicals that are released and subsequently craved as a repeated experience. I heard Joe Dispenza talking about this a number of times. And I believe he says that it takes a couple of weeks, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, something like that, to rewire the neural pathways. Yeah, 2 to 3 weeks. And then after that, it all becomes easier and easier as old habits are weakened and replaced by new ones. And that's, you know, that's just the science, but but it does seem to correlate in some very key ways that can be hugely helpful for people who enjoy the scientific angle of things. So to master your vibratory field means cleaning up the emotional body. Part of this effort, besides learning to master your thoughts, is to reclaim the full spectrum of crystalline clear human emotions. And that means to allow pure joy and love and gratitude and bliss, etc., etc., to be readily available in addition to pure expressions of sorrow or grief, etc., as appropriate emotional responses to whatever the given situation happens to be. So there can be no more masking or shrouding any emotion in a misguided attempt to protect yourself from having to feel. And by the same token, no more overblown versions of any of those emotions that I mentioned for whatever distraction purposes that they might have served before. So if you're a habitual drama creator, or if you know somebody who is, you'll know what I'm talking about there. Now, not all of us engage in any of these protective behaviors that I just mentioned, but I mention it here because I myself was notorious for numbing out a whole range of uncomfortable emotions that I wasn't prepared to feel. But it's a numb energy field that produces numb emotions, like a fuzzed out, bland energy field. And that's not going to cut it for somebody that aspires to crystal clear mastery. So I had to do a fair amount of concentrated work to wake up that full range of emotions and dust them off and make them available to myself so I could feel them all again, thereby clearing and raising the vibratory frequency of my energy field in the process. A whole array of healthy, clear, appropriate emotions is key for precise, compassionate, and true knowing of yourself, I would say, in fuller identity as the divine. The emotions can't be suppressed or distorted to serve any lower purposes, and they can't remain in the service of fear in any way. Not if you want a sparkling field that radiates high frequency. So the emotions have to be clean and allowed to shine in their natural expression. And when this happens, then and only then, they can catalyze amazing, magnificent miracles of manifestation to help reshape the world in the highest possible ways. But if there's any unexamined shadow crap lurking within that emotional expression, well, trust me, you'll get back exactly what you put out, put it that way. And it probably won't be pretty. Because nobody can be truly helpful to self or other until they're emitting a clear, healthy, high-frequency energy field. And once they are effortlessly radiating a field like that, which is simply an expression of their very being, doesn't involve any kind of doing, that kind of clear, healthy, high-frequency field is capable of, God, massive miracles, like miracles that are felt throughout the entire universe for all eternity, for all I know. But again, it all comes down to mind mastery, which is another way of saying mastery of your energetic frequency. So this is one handy red flag that I use in terms of training myself, training my mind. It occurs to me that anytime I worry about anything, no matter how trivial, it's an immediate signal that I've fallen back into the old luxury of victim thinking. It means that I am denying my creative abilities because it's a more comfortable habit to feel powerless against future events than it is to admit that I am all I require in every situation. Sorry. I'm on my phone doing pal talk. anyway. God, what was I saying? It's more comfortable feeling powerless against future events than it is to admit that I am all I require and that the universe is always benevolent and it always has my back. So when I am feeling this way, it's an invitation to investigate my hidden beliefs more deeply. You know, if I'm worrying, it's a good clue that I should look at how this particular worry pulls up some dormant, shadowy belief that I might not have even known about otherwise. What exactly am I believing down in the shadows that expresses itself as conscious worry? I look at these things together with the light of my higher self, and I ask for this higher knowing to illuminate the shadowy belief. And then I just witness it. The witnessing of it is all that's ever required, just bringing it into the light of consciousness. You know, not to judge it or to try and fix it, because those agendas are actually not helpful. At least I've found they're like a complete waste of time. And they're not needed. Just being the non-judging witness will bring amazingly rapid change. And there are other ways to fine-tune that process to make it even more effective. We'll talk a little bit more about how to relate to the shadow self, the best ways to work with it, another time in one of the later weeks, I think. But anyway, worry. So worry is great. It's an immediate red flag. It's an invitation to sit up and take notice of your energy field. Because not only is worry a wasted activity in the sense that it doesn't help or accomplish anything ever, but in addition to that, it's a sure way to drag down your frequency. It's a sure way to drag it through the mud for no particular benefit other than habit. Okay, I'm going to go look and see if there's any comments or questions. It is but myself I crucify, but what if I'm a masochist and proud of it? Well, then knock yourself out. Question, what are you talking about? Can you be more specific? Just arrived. Talking about energetic frequency and waking up. Okay. Moving on here. Okay, so there's a certain responsibility that comes with being a being of higher vibration, meaning like somebody who radiates an extremely higher vibration, like an unconditional love vibration. And that responsibility is to offer love and healing on a higher unseen level, a level of the non-physical, I guess you could say. So, for example, when on being rocked by the negativity of others or by attacks from others, whether we're talking about interpersonal attacks on you or some kind of big mass attack incident that happens out in the world that freaks everybody out, you know, like a terror attack or something like that. It doesn't actually matter what kind. To perceive attack and to quail from it or to defend against it or even to complain about it for that matter or to counterattack is to automatically choose to experience pain. And obviously it's a nosedive in your energetic frequency too. But it's also a choice to experience weakness, because that kind of engagement on any level, to any degree, is to perceive yourself as a victim of the world you see, which, as we know, in itself brings a guaranteed world of hurt. So when you put yourself into that role of victim, and make no mistake, nobody can do that to you. It's always and only by your own choice. So when you choose the victim role, you are simultaneously choosing every dark, shadowy belief that also resides in that same house where victimhood lives in you. There is simply no way to avoid that. They come as a single vibratory package. They all exist together. So there's this. There's this responsibility to know yourself as never being the victim of anything, and to choose the high road of love and healing as the response to every challenge that comes your way. And no surprise, it can be very hard to make that choice sometimes, like really hard, unbelievably hard. But it's really the only choice to make after a certain point in your upward vibratory journey. Because you will recognize, you'll know damn well that the alternative is yet another painful visit to Victim House, which is a world of agony. But there's also something else. The choice for love also turns out to have the seeds of your joy and your freedom within it. And that comes precisely because, and I'm going to use the biblical phraseology here, It comes because you turn the other cheek. Don't freak out. I don't mean that in the way that it's usually understood. I'm not talking about it in a doormat way, you know, not in a victimized, weak sort of way. In fact, it's really the opposite. To turn the other cheek is actually badass because it makes you invulnerable. It doesn't matter what anybody dishes up because your response is the same no matter what. You offer love. You offer blessing and compassion. Not in some blissed out, happy, happy, joy, joy kind of way. More in a bring it, I dare ya. I'm going to love the crap out of you, and I'm going to give us both a get out of hell free card. And I don't care whether you consciously want me to or not, because you can't stop me. And that makes me invulnerable and invincible. The choice for love in the face of attack raises and cleanses your own vibration like nobody's business. It makes it go astronomically higher, while also helping to release the other person, the attacker, the messenger, from their cycles of pain and negativity, whether they know it or not, whether they like it or not. This act is performed on behalf of the one collective self, of which you are a part. So it's definitely win-win all the way around, because you are training your mind to, in essence, remember God in every situation. And that's why it becomes your responsibility to do that, even when the world is showing you its frowny face. Your high vibration is itself a beacon, kind of like the bat signal, except it's not a call for help. It's a beacon that says, I'm here to help. And the world does respond to that. Not necessarily on a conscious level, but nevertheless, the world will sometimes specifically seek you out, asking to have you remember God on its behalf, energetically speaking, anyway. And there's something else, too. With higher vibration comes a growing recognition of the essential trustworthiness of the, quote-unquote, one-ship, the collective self. Even though you experience it as being ruled by ego, and it has therefore always been perceived as highly dangerous before this, something funny occurs. The higher you go in your own vibration, the more the awareness starts to dawn that underlying the multitudinous egos making up the one self, there's actually the sweetness of God. And it loves each one of us, all of us, so dearly. So within any given attacker resides a portion of the one-ship, exactly the same as in you. And that person's portion of the one-ship is asking you for the love that only a being of high vibration can give for healing purposes of that person who's acting out as the attacker. If that makes sense. So it isn't necessary to place your trust in the person's ego self, thank goodness, but you will more and more clearly start to recognize the God self that is the true identity of this person. And that identity is completely trustworthy. And who knows, maybe the attacker has shown up at exactly the right time in response to your own prayer to know the true self deeper, you know? Maybe it's their higher self operating in consort with your higher self. The love that has brought this negative person forward to help you realize your goal is felt and recognized by them on a level that they themselves might be just completely unaware of. The attacker loves you deeply, as Byron Katie might say. They just don't realize it yet. To recognize the trustworthiness of the collective self aka humanity, is another way of saying it's the forgiveness of humanity. It's a 100% necessary step along the path to mastery and along the road to having a diamond-like unconditional love vibration. So, how do you learn to trust and forgive the collective self? Well, there's only one way that I know of, to learn how to trust and love and forgive your own self first. Those qualities of love and forgiveness absolutely cannot be extended to the world out there if you don't have it in here first, period. It's just common sense, and it's also true. We'll get into that much more deeply on another week's session. It's definitely a topic for another day. Let's stop and see if we have any questions or comments, because, oh, it's 9:57, and I'm out of things. Let's see. Don Quixote. Oops. Okie dokie. Well, there you go. It's been great fun for me, and nice to be with you, and I will see you next week at same time, same bat channel. Bye. Take care, everybody.
Thank you so much.